Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. These are the stories that I'll be looking into on today's program. Pope Benedict continues his catechesis about the early fathers of the Church at his weekly general audience. A three-day interreligious forum in Naples, attended by leaders and representatives of the world's main faith traditions, concludes with the collective signing of an appeal for peace. And on the eve of Pope Benedict's audience with the Bosnian president, we look at the plight of Bosnia's dwindling Catholic community. Here in Rome, a crowd of over 20,000 people filled St. Peter's Square today to hear the latest instalment in Pope Benedict's catechesis on the early fathers of the Church at his weekly general audience. Emma McCarthy followed the event.
Pilgrims from Slovakia to the far reaches of Latin America, religious sisters of the Order of the Sorrowful Mother in Rome for their 20th general chapter, Lutheran evangelicals from the United States, newlyweds and lay youth movements were all among the thousands in St. Peter's Square this Wednesday. Reflecting on the life of the 4th century Italian saint, Ambrose of Milan, Pope Benedict urged them to engage with the Word of God.
Born into a Christian family in the middle of the 4th century, Ambrose was educated in Rome and sent as governor to Milan, where also a catechumen, he was soon acclaimed as bishop. He set about mastering the scriptures, guided by the writings of Origen and the practice of Lectio Divina, a form of prayerful meditation on the Word of God. It was Ambrose who introduced his practice to the West, and it deeply permeated his life and preaching.
The Pope pointed out the effect that this saint's teaching had on his contemporaries, particularly on one nobleman destined himself to become a future saint.
St. Augustine, who was converted in Milan and baptized by Ambrose, relates a profound impression which Ambrose's engagement with the Word of God left upon him. Ambrose, contrary to the custom of the time, did not read the scriptures aloud, which Augustine interpreted as a sign of how deeply the inspired word had penetrated the holy bishop's mind and heart. This image can serve as an icon of Ambrose as a catechist. His teaching was inseparable from his prayer and his entire life. For Ambrose, Christ was everything. Omnia Christus est nobis.
And so it must be, concluded Pope Benedict, for every catechist and indeed for every one of the Lord's disciples.
Upon all the English-speaking visitors and pilgrims, I invoke God's abundant blessings of peace and joy.
A three-day international peace forum, attended by religious leaders and representatives of all the major faith traditions, has ended in the Italian city of Naples with a condemnation of violence and a pledge to work for a more peaceful world. Pope Benedict was in Naples for the opening day of the forum and met the religious leaders, who included the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew I of Constantinople, the Anglican Archbishop of Canterbury Rowing Williams, as well as prominent representatives of the Muslim, Jewish, Buddhist and Hindu faiths. Philippa Hitchin was in Naples for the forum and she filed this report.
Dialogue does not cancel differences. It enriches life and dispels the pessimism that makes one see the other as a threat. After 3 days of public debates and private encounters, more than 300 religious leaders and representatives of the world's great faiths gathered in the central Piazza del Plebiscito here in Naples to condemn violence and to commit themselves to the struggle for a more peaceful world. After praying in different locations around the square, bells rang out as this multicoloured crowd of Christians, Muslims, Jews, Buddhists and Hindus gathered together to sign an appeal for peace, which was symbolically handed to a group of young children as a sign of hope for their future. After each leader had lighted a candle and signed the appeal, these men and women of faith embraced each other, a gesture unthinkable for some of them just a few years ago. And beyond these grand public gestures, plenty of real peace building also goes on at these meetings. On Monday, the Israeli Interior Minister sat down with a special envoy of the Palestinian president to discuss practical ways of moving beyond the violence which continues to kill and maim. A short distance down the coast in Amalfi, meanwhile, the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew of Constantinople attended a ceremony in the cathedral during which relics of the Apostle Andrew were returned to the Orthodox Church. Another tangible sign of the healing of ancient religious divisions. 21 years after Pope John Paul first called leaders of all faiths to Assisi to pray for peace, these encounters continue to provide fertile ground for those working to end conflict and oppression in so many different countries. As participants here have recalled, dialogue is the only alternative to confrontation and conflict. Survivors of Auschwitz, Rwanda, or the military dictatorships of Latin America have provided powerful testimony to a human spirit which will not bow to the logic of hatred, but continues striving for peace and reconciliation, even in the most dramatic conditions. From Naples, these religious leaders, more numerous than ever before, have reiterated that anyone using the name of God to hate or kill is cursing the name of God. Echoing the words of Pope Benedict here on Sunday at the opening of the meeting, they have reaffirmed their trust in the power of prayer to change hearts and dispel the fear that leads to violence and war. Next year, the meeting moves on to the divided island of Cyprus, an ancient crossroads between East and West, located close to the war-torn Middle East. Saint Egidio spokesman Mario Marazziti told me more about the choice of Cyprus for the 2008 Peace Forum.
It is the choice of thinking of peace, creating a dialogue in a world that is very close to the idea of conflict and to the noise of conflicts. So I think that it is a real choice to get to the heart of the problem of peace and dialogue so as to try to gain momentum, to win over mistrust, over difficulties, and for sure to launch a different and strong appeal for peace also in the Middle East and to the world.
This is a meeting of religious leaders, religious representatives, but it has an increasingly political overtone, it seems to me, and the choice of Cyprus would seem to confirm that.
I think that this meeting in Naples has been the meeting under the word spirit. I think that the prayer has been the real center of this meeting, but that the spirit, when it is effective, it goes to the crossroads of human suffering. So I think that in a moment in which politics and politicians worldwide seem to be blocked, to be without imagination, to imagine something different from war, to settle conflicts and differences, I think that from religious people and believers is coming a more free culture that is able to draw a different picture and to invite human hearts to work for peace even when there are difficulties. And I think that when there was the panel on the Middle East and the Minister of Foreign of Internal Affairs of Israel and the representative of the Prime Minister from Palestine and the Italian Minister of Foreign Affairs in the name of Italy and Europe were speaking and creating a real different way of speaking about peace, saying, well, we are fed up of processes of peace, of roadmaps. We want peace, and to do this, we are available to talk one by one, one to one, but also involving all the Arab world to go faster to get to this goal. I think that this has been somehow favored by this, the clear way and frank way of speaking and the feeling of the spirit here in Naples. So I think that what we feel now as a normal thing, that religious leaders are one by one at the side of the other one and talking together frankly, even saying what differs from one to it and the other one. Well, I think that this is a very, it's something that was unbelievable just 10 or 20 years ago.
10 or 20 years ago, you found it very difficult to have Jewish and Muslim leaders, didn't you, sitting around the same table as we saw sitting at the table with the Pope on Sunday?
Absolutely, it was impossible to imagine to have in the same picture one Muslim person and one Jewish person with the keffia. And to see them at the table with the Pope, talking frankly, smiling even with some problems in their hearts, under the real brotherly and fatherly atmosphere created by Pope Benedict XVI, well, I think it was something that is just a way of foreseeing how the world can be. And it is not a dream, it has been reality.
Some may claim such dreams of peace are simply a rhetorical exercise of fine sentiments and impractical illusions. But in the words of this appeal for peace, dialogue is not the illusion of the weak, but the wisdom of the strong, of those who believe there is no alternative to the unity of the human family, of those who have the courage to follow Pope Benedict's call here in Naples. Religions, he said, can and must offer precious resources for the construction of a peaceful future for humanity. In Naples, I'm Philippa Hitchin.
As we heard earlier, the Peace Forum in Naples was attended by the Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople, Bartholomew, and other leading representatives from the Orthodox Church. Among them was the Deputy Chairman of the Patriarchate of Moscow's Department for Foreign Affairs, the Archpriest Evalod Chaplin. He spoke to Philippa about the ongoing ecumenical dialogue between the two churches.
I think it's very important that several heads of churches came, and that reflected high level of appreciation of churches and peoples of this meeting and the community of Santa Gidea, which is very active in this field, of interreligious and intercultural dialogue. At the same time, it's extremely important that huge variety of simple people, huge variety of people of different walks of life came here and attended the Mass celebrated by His Holiness Pope Benedict XVI. Many people from the business community, many people from the journalistic community, many artists, scientists, and of course religious figures of different religions participated. And that, I think, very well reflects the spiritual thirst which exists in the world and the desire for dialogue between different religions and cultures. And I think I must congratulate the community of Santa Gidea with the fact that the level of meetings, both in terms of political and official representation and in terms of participation of people, is upgrading every year, every meeting.
You met publicly with Pope Benedict. I imagine there were also meetings that went on behind the scenes. Can you tell us anything about any kind of conversation that you had with the Pope?
We didn't have any official bilateral talks between the Roman Catholic and the Russian Orthodox Church here. I think there will be more opportunities for such talks. But the contacts on the level of friendly exchange of opinions, on the level of discussing the situation in the world and in our churches, of course, took place in many cases with a number of cardinals of the Roman Catholic Church.
A prominent Muslim representative at the Naples Forum was Ezzedine Ibrahim, a cultural advisor to the President of the United Arab Emirates. Ibrahim was among the 138 Muslim scholars who recently signed a letter to Pope Benedict and other Christian leaders, urging Christians and Muslims to build on their common belief in one God to work for peace. He told us more about their reasons for sending this letter to the Pope.
The reason for that document is this, that peace cannot be preached by one side calling for it and the other side listening only. Both sides have to speak out. Do they believe in it or not? Now, the word for dialogue came from Rome, came from Pope John the 23rd, some years ago in 1963, and it was developed, and it is being maintained. And we hope it will continue. Why I say we hope? Because there was some interview in some newspaper which is giving some doubt. Anyway, that was the voice that came from Rome. You should hear our voice. We did speak out. I myself, a limited person in my own way, living in a small country called United Arab Emirates, I wrote three, I would say, booklets on the matter. But you need something which is agreed upon by many, not the voice of one person, especially if that one person is not really known or representative of a huge following. So 138 scholars from different parts of the Muslim world is meaningful. And in that document, the letter says that let us come together for a common word of belief in God, a common word of fraternity and brotherhood as human beings believing in the one God. That's the gist of it. What to do? The important thing is that we exchange peaceful gestures, that we believe that we are not antagonistic, we are not enemies, we are believers in God. How could we be enemies? What happened in history should be judged by historical analysis. Empires fight each other. It's a question of either you eat me or I eat you. But that is the language of the empires, not the language of heaven, not the language of religions. Religions did commit the mistake of fighting in the name of God, both ways. And let us be honest with ourselves. Whatever justification we make is a bit fabricated. We did commit this mistake. There is no point about trying to twist each other's arm. Let people having the religion they believed in, but let them coexist and live together. That is what the document is called for.
That was the Muslim representative, Ezzedine Ibrahim. And you also heard earlier the Archpriest Evalod Chaplin from the Patriarchate of Moscow. Pope Benedict meets Bosnia's current president, Zeliko Komšić, in a private audience at the Vatican this week. Under the terms of the Dayton Accord that was drawn up at the end of Bosnia's civil war in the 1990s, the presidency in the nation rotates every 8 months between a Serb, a Bosnian Muslim and a Croat, representing the three main ethnic groups. President Komšić is a Croat and has been head of state since July. Croats are mainly Catholics. Virtually all Serbs are Orthodox Christians, whilst the largest ethnic group are the Muslims. It's now over a decade since the end of the brutal civil war in Bosnia, but Catholics there are still struggling with its after effects. More than half of Bosnia's Catholics have left the nation since the war broke out in 1992, and this exodus is continuing to this day. In the capital Sarajevo, there were around 500,000 Catholics when the war began. But by the end of the conflict, there were only 125,000 left. The vast majority of those displaced by the war have not returned. They cite continuing difficulties in proving ownership of property confiscated from them during the fighting or of obtaining funds to rebuild destroyed properties. Another major deterrent is the high level of unemployment in Bosnia. The Catholic bishop said recently that the Dayton Peace Accords interrupted the war in Bosnia, but failed to bring real peace and justice to the Balkan nation. They believe Catholics in Bosnia were sidelined by the Dayton Accords when it comes to their political and constitutional rights, and say they also lack a voice in the country's media. Monsignor Mato Zovkic is the Vicar General of the Catholic Diocese of Sarajevo, and he spoke to me about the problems facing Bosnia's dwindling Catholic community.
The refugees who had left our parishes and dioceses in largest number did not return. My diocese had before the war 528,000. We now have 205,000, and this situation remains a status quo. There is no change for better or for worse.
And why is it so difficult for those who left as a result of the war to return to Bosnia? What are the obstacles facing them?
Well, destroyed settlements, destroyed villages, And 12 years after the war, those who have school-aged children had to find a place to live and send their children to schools where they live now. Those who have returned are mostly elderly persons in about 25 parishes of my diocese, which are on territory of Republika Srpska. We have very small numbers of returnees, from 10 to 150 persons, mostly elderly. And when they die, their children bury them and lock the house and return back to Croatia or Austria or wherever they live right now.
Are there still Catholics in Bosnia-Herzegovina who are leaving each year? I mean, is there an exodus going on?
Well, I recently met a pastor who is in this section of the diocese, and he told me that since last year, 24 parishioners have left parish, so that he now has 310 only. Beside dying, there is in some of these areas tendency of moving out young families or persons who are in age of working. This is a sad phenomenon which we cannot stop because the church is not rich enough to offer them jobs, you know.
And is it the lack of jobs is the main reason that's driving these people to leave, or are there other reasons?
Right now, I would say the lack of jobs or lack of decent jobs. You may work for nothing or wait for 3 or more months for your first salary, and this is terrible difficulty.
During the war, I know that in some dioceses, the vast majority of churches were destroyed. How many of these churches have been rebuilt?
I can speak for my diocese. All of the parish churches which have been destroyed by Serbian armed men have been renewed or remade, except for one. We continued rebuilding the churches, and the local civil authorities requested it must be in the same shape, same size, although the number of returnees is desperately small.
Is one of the reasons why Catholics are leaving because they do not feel they have any political or cultural rights?
You could say so, but the reason for school-aged families of school-aged children did not return at all. Those who wanted a education for their children in Latin characters, in literature, history, would not have such education in the territory of Republika Srpska. They did not return. Those who are now leaving are mostly who would like to work, couldn't wait anymore for getting a job, or those who are very sick and cannot get medical treatment in the places where they live now.
When it comes to the Catholics living in Bosnia, are they tend to live in groups with other Catholics, or is there a mix of, you know, Catholics, Muslims, Serbs? I mean, what are relations like between the three ethnic groups now?
Urban population, like people living in Sarajevo, in Zenica, in Tuzla, in Travnik, are mixed groups, you know, and the relations between Catholics and majority Muslims in our part of the country are now, I would say, quiet, meaning we share some problems together, like shortage of jobs, like having a state which doesn't function properly, waiting for good reforms, for a change for better. In these days, we have very sharply discussed the police reform, but the agreement did not find place because our politically elected, democratically elected leaders cannot find a solution. A section of Serbs in this country would like to preserve the high degree of autonomy. Sections of Croats and Bošnjak Muslims say we cannot function like that, and the foreign people living with us here, military and diplomatic personnel, refuse to impose the new laws.
As you know, the president of Bosnia is meeting the Pope this week. What message would you like Pope Benedict to give to the Bosnian leadership?
President Komšić is coming to see the Pope because of signing the new treatment between the state Bosnia-Herzegovina and the Holy See concerning needs of Catholic community in this country. So I am glad that we have reached this level of our mutual relationships. What we need is the implementation of the new treaty, new agreement between the Holy See and Bosnia-Herzegovina. I have a very bad experience here. We make the laws. but nobody implements them. So if the Holy Father and diplomatic personnel of the Holy See, together with other colleagues from European countries here in Sarajevo, could somehow give impulses, you know, go on, implement what you have signed. This would be the best fruit of the president's visit to the Holy See.
But do you think, in a general way, there is some reconciliation, say, between Catholics and Muslims, or would you say that relations are still quite tense?
The relations are somehow frozen. You know, our expectations were not implemented. The concept of reconciliation, forgiveness, in Christian eyes and Muslim eyes do differ. Muslims are a religion of justice and law. They say, as long as Karadzic and Mladic are at large, we cannot speak of forgiveness and new trust and so on. But we Christians say, well, we could, we can, we should forgive, because we need God's forgiveness, but this is just a theoretical proclamation. I do not see any significant movement of getting the new trust between our two communities, Christians or Catholics and Muslims in this country. But what I see is our leaders do meet, bishops and Grand Mufti of Bosnia, they do meet, and when our believers see if our pastors are meeting, this is a sign we should also try to live in peace, you know.
And what about relations with the Serb community?
It depends on majority, you know. Here in Sarajevo, Serb Orthodox population are tiny minority, like we Catholics, maybe 3-5%. Here we are very open to mutual meetings and ecumenical collaboration. While in Banja Luka, where Orthodox are absolute majority, some of their theologians say we don't need ecumenical relations. And this is our sad, you know, temptation to be arrogant where you are majority and to be open-minded where you are minority.
Given the fact that Bosnia has lost so much of its Catholic inhabitants and that there is this continuing exodus, particularly of young people abroad, how do you feel about the future of the Catholic Church in Bosnia?
Well, together with my Archbishop, Cardinal Vinko Pulic, I support the idea we priests should stay here, remain here, and serve our fellow Catholics to be where we are. You know, Catholic approach to multi-religious, multi-ethnic situation is we should not move out. We remain and we look, we ask for freedom, but we remain witnessing our Catholic identity and fulfilling our mission in such a situation. As a priest, as a Christian, I am an optimist.
The bishops of Bosnia-Herzegovina said, in fact, that the Dayton Accords interrupted the war, but they did not bring peace. Is that a true statement?
Yes, they did not bring a just peace and a viable state. We have a ceasefire, not real peace.
I was speaking there to Monsignor Meto Zovkic, the Vicar General of the Diocese of Sarajevo in Bosnia. And that's all from us here at the English programme for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. Don't forget, you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. And this programming note for our Rome listeners. Starting October the 28th, this programme will no longer be broadcast on 105 FM. But you can still catch it on the same days, at the same times, on 93.3 FM. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.